Support comes from St. Louis Public Library Foundation, helping the library serve children and their families with programs and services needed to become lifelong readers. More information about the foundation is at slpl.org.
This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Elaine Cha. There was a cooler July sort of sandwich.
Even in no-till systems, no-till kind of conservation agriculture systems where people aren't tearing or ripping the soil, we can still get wind-blown erosion because of planting or other types of equipment that's running through the field.
It is summer, it is supposed to be hot, it is supposed to be humid, but we don't warn people unnecessarily.
At night, that's when the effect of humidity is really elevated.
The St. Louis area has a well-deserved reputation for hot, muggy summers. And finally, our weather apps, and let's be frank, our bodies, are telling us temps are cooling down. So we can relax at least until next summer, right? Well, the answer is both yes and no. And here to tell us why, we've got two field experts. First, we welcome Matt Beicher, lead meteorologist with the National Weather Service, St. Louis. Great to have you back.
Thank you very much, Elaine.
And we're happy to welcome Trent Ford, Illinois State climatologist. Trent, thanks so much for making time for us today.
Yeah, great to be on, Elaine.
So, Matt, let's start with you. As we said in the intro, temperatures are finally coming down. But not long ago, we had a lot of really hot summer days. Was that normal for our region?
So what's defined as normal seems to be changing itself as well. So we take a look at normal for summer as hot, muggy, right? But even over the course of the last 30, 40, 50 years, we're seeing that baseline, what we consider to be normal, change slightly. And I don't think it's perceptible changes. You know, the body, human body can't take a couple of degrees and notice that. But we are seeing a gradual increase in what normal is. This summer in particular exceeded those normals in terms of temperature and precipitation in different ways. So overall, it was a slightly warmer than normal summer, and we consider summer, just to make it easy on ourselves, June, July, and August, just to do that. However, it's if you look at that, it doesn't tell the whole story. June and August were much warmer than normal, a couple of degrees above normal, with several inches below normal precipitation. So we weren't getting a lot of rain in St. Louis, and we were a little bit warmer than normal, which kind of exacerbates that situation. But July was kind of a reprieve. We were near normal. We had quite a bit of rain in St. Louis. So it kind of evened us out a little bit. It really didn't even us out totally. We were a little bit below normal in terms of rain, but and a little bit warmer than normal in terms of temperature. But it's those oscillations month to month, even day to day, that are concerning for everyday life.
Right. And do those oscillations also then contribute to our feeling like there is such a big difference? There is a cooler July sort of sandwich happening.
It might. I think that the ability for us to string together all those different extremes and keep in mind that it's still summer is a little bit difficult because we're kind of it's a recency bias. We're just trying to remember. Oh yeah, it was hot back in June, so this stretch of nicer weather or actually below normal weather, it's kind of strange for a summer in St. Louis and summer in the Midwest. It wasn't just St. Louis. The Midwest was actually relatively normal, if not slightly below normal, with in terms of temperatures in July. So it's difficult to string those together.
Trent, something I want to ask you about is a term that was sort of trending a few weeks ago, started popping up all over the Midwest, and that's corn sweat. So what exactly is corn sweat?
Yeah, it's funny. This every year around July, and then it kind of keeps going through the summer, I hear about corn sweat and get questions about it. This year it exploded. I'm not exactly sure why that is, but it definitely was very popular, not just in the Midwest, but nationally. Corn sweat actually is just kind of a colloquial term for something we call transpiration, which is when the corn plant in this particular instance, but really most plants do this, they have little holes in the bottom of their leaves called stomata. They take up water through their roots, and they open up their stomata and their leaves to let in carbon, to let in light for energy. And there's a little bit of water that's released, and it's evaporated into the air. And the amount of transpiration that an individual plant gives off is pretty small. Maximally, a corn plant will give off maybe 3/10 of an inch at the very maximum during silking stage, kind of mid-July. Mm-hmm. But if you multiply that by all the plants we have, not just corn, but all the plants we have across just the St. Louis area alone, let alone all of Missouri and Illinois, it adds up to quite a bit of moisture. And mm-hmm. so it's doing this all the time whenever the plant is actively respirating. The issue is that we really hear about corn sweat most when we have high humidity. And that's when people start to think about, well, how much of this humidity is because there's so much corn out there.
Right.
And so that's kind of where it comes up. And in reality, it's kind of the agricultural landscape that dominates much of Illinois and Missouri does contribute a significant amount of moisture for humidity. But in general, from the studies that have been done, it's less than what is being blown in from other areas like the Gulf of Mexico.
Mm-hmm. So corn then is not the prime culprit in what we're feeling. So in terms of what you're saying about what is being blown in from the Gulf, how is that contributing to our humid days and hot nights?
Yeah, so the humidity is a really important factor when you think about the effect of heat on human and animal health. So the reason being is that, you know, our bodies have evolved to deal with heat and hot conditions by sweating, our sweat. And that sweat is evaporated and that cools our skin temperature. But, you know, something that gets lost in this corn sweat discussion too is the fact that we as humans and the corn can transpire or sweat as much as we want, but if that atmosphere is really, that air is really, really humid, it's not going to take in very much more moisture. Mm-hmm. And that's where that humidity really plays a role, that if we get that not just hot air but very humid air blowing in, or what we call advecting in from the Gulf and other regions, it makes our sweating less effective at cooling down our bodies. So during the day, those hot and humid conditions are much more dangerous than the conditions that are at the same temperature but drier. And that's really why the National Weather Service and others use the heat index, which combines the effect of heat and humidity. But as you mentioned, at night, that's when the effect of humidity is really elevated. And mm-hmm. and this is something that, you know, during the summer and even this time of the year, we often kind of gravitate towards the big eye-popping high temperatures. Like, it got to 103 in St. Louis today. But in reality, that humidity plays an even larger effect at night, when we may only get down to 80, 82, 83 degrees.
Right,
and that
right.
adds to the stress that heat really adds to humans.
Mm-hmm. So with humidity, that is moisture. And Matt, you'd mentioned that we did not get as much precipitation as we would in other years, but there was also some extreme rain. And in July, floods caused a dam to nearly fail in Nashville, Illinois. And we actually had our environment reporter, Kate Grumke, and Brian Munoz out there to take photos and video. Was that sort of precipitation unusual for that area of Nashville, Illinois?
I wouldn't say it's unusual for that area, just because while they got quite a bit of rain, 5 to 7 inches of rain in a very short period of time, that's not uncommon for the summer. What is unfortunate is that that rain fell over a very short period of time over the same area. So in a combination of rain, repeated rounds of thunderstorms going over and over and over one specific area. Mm-hmm. And we even saw some of that in St. Louis, not to nearly as much extent as Nashville did, but,
right.
But you know, same thunderstorms over, rounds of thunderstorms over and over again, and what we call high efficiency rainfall. So you talk about humidity at the surface or near the surface. I'm talking about humidity throughout the entire atmosphere. If you think of the atmosphere as kind of a column right above your head, there's high humidity through that whole atmosphere. There's less opportunity for all that moisture to come out of the air if it's really saturated. Mm-hmm. So if that's the case, that combined with that those repeated rounds of thunderstorms is really a worst case scenario. Those systems are not uncommon in the summer, but they aren't, you know, they're not run of the mill thunderstorms. These are things that we are expected to see more of, these extreme top 1% of historic rainfall type of events are becoming more common in the Midwest, according to the National Climate Assessment. Mm-hmm. And to touch on something that Trent said about overnight lows and humidity as well, that is a really underreported or an under discussed aspect of heat stress.
Mm-hmm.
in June of this year in particular, on average, we had 3.5 degrees warmer lows than we would normally have. So we're not getting that reprieve during the day in addition to the humidity, we're not getting the reprieve of temperatures at night in addition to the humidity that sticks around overnight. For folks that don't have air conditioning, don't have means to relieve themselves of the heat and humidity, it's an unbalanced stress. You know, we have the opportunity of going to our air-conditioned apartments or houses. Not everybody in the St. Louis region has that ability.
We're going to take a quick break, but we'll be back very shortly to continue this conversation. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio.
If you have a smart speaker, you have access to the entire world of NPR and St. Louis Public Radio. All the latest news and all the captivating stories. Activate our voices with yours by telling your smart speaker to play St. Louis Public Radio.
Let's return to our conversation about extreme weather, particularly heat and wet, and why certain folks are at risk during emergency weather situations. Talking with us about these topics, we have Trent Ford, Illinois State Climatologist, and Matt Beicher, Lead Meteorologist with the National Weather Service, St. Louis. Before the break, we were talking about rain, and I'd like to hear, Matt, from you about the effect, the long-term effects that rain have on people, and the kinds of things that we need to sort of be thinking about when it comes to precipitation and how this affects our living environment.
Yeah, rain's funny because you need a decent amount of it, but you don't want too much. You don't want too little. It's kind of a Goldilocks effect. So in terms of too much rain, I think that might be the easier way to start. Too much rain can result in flooding. Flooding results in injury and death. As a matter of fact, it's the number two killer in the United States in terms of weather-related fatalities behind heat. So we're talking about the top two. Mm-hmm. It's a silent killer, right? And it's sociological studies have been done as to why that is. Why does flooding kill people? And it's mainly because people don't expect it to be that bad. They will put themselves into situations. And unfortunately, we have several fatalities in the same, I'll use this bi-state area, even as far out as Columbia, Missouri, this year, where people either drove into flooded waters or something which is even sadder. First responders are saving people from floodwaters, and then they themselves pass away because of the floodwaters. So there's that. There's the potential for increased waterborne disease, and then economic loss and social displacement. If you've got people who are maybe lower middle class or just barely above the poverty line living in a home or in some sort of dwelling, and that dwelling gets flooded and they don't have the proper insurance, that significantly changes their living conditions. Mm-hmm. And then on the opposite side of things, if you don't have enough, then we have agricultural problems. And I know Trent can speak to this probably with a lot more fluency, but you know, drought is a huge crippling a problem in the Midwest. We are the sort of breadbasket of America and parts of the world, and we provide quite a bit of resources to the rest of the world and the United States itself. So not having that rain is certainly a detriment to the agricultural community, mm-hmm. but also shipping and navigation on the main stem rivers. Right. So lots of stuff that could go wrong either way.
Mm-hmm. So Trent, you were called on by Matt here, and there is a drought index report that actually came out this morning. What are the numbers there, and what do they tell us?
Yeah, so this is the U.S. Drought Monitor, which is released weekly, and it's sort of the gold standard for drought monitoring across the United States. And what it's showing is that across the Midwest generally, but particularly in the mid-Mississippi Valley, we're seeing an expansion of drought because of the conditions that Matt talked about earlier about how dry August was, despite the wetness in July, and how dry the start of September has been. So as of this latest map, which is, by the way, is current as of Tuesday, so it was released today, current as of Tuesday, mm-hmm. roughly 44% of the St. Louis weather forecast area, which stretches from Columbia to, you know, call it Mount Vernon, Illinois, is in moderate drought, and a small corner in the very southeast part of the region is in severe drought, what we call D2. Mm-hmm. So it's worse as you go south towards Cape Girardeau, and even worse in the Boot Heel. But this is something that we've seen as sort of like a regional expansion of broader drought that's affected the lower Mississippi Valley and Ohio Valleys for the last month or so.
Mm-hmm. You know, we're a little over a year out, Trent, from a deadly dust storm that happened and led to zero visibility conditions on Interstate 55 in Illinois. 7 people died and 37 others were injured in a crash of 72 vehicles. I mean, how rare is an event like that? And you know, to what extent is drought the problem, or are we misunderstanding or misapprehending if we're only thinking about drought and not about precipitation, which we may think of as being the flip side?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting with the dust storm because we are largely misunderstanding the issues at hand there, but it actually is not even the flip side of precipitation. It's something a bit different, but I'll get to that in a second. So mm-hmm. what happened with the dust storm last year, it is, yes and no, it's a rare event. It's an event that we don't necessarily have great records of dust storms in the Midwest like they do out west, because it's much less of a frequent hazard, but it's a hazard nonetheless. So what we have to do is kind of stitch together reports from the National Weather Service, from newspapers going back. And so what we see is that really significant dust storms like what we saw last year along I-55 happen maybe once every 4 or 5 years across, at least across Illinois. Mm-hmm. What we see is that they typically happen that time of the year between April and June. And that is when we're typically the windiest climatologically, but we also have a lot of land management and people working the soil, which can stir up and increase the wind erosion rates. And that's really where a lot of the what happened last year is sort of misunderstood. The weather conditions that created that dust storm, that stirred up the dust, were extreme. Yes, the winds were sustained, 25 to 45 miles per hour, gusts up to maybe 60 miles per hour across that region. But it's not necessarily super rare, certainly not unprecedented, to have strong winds. Also, because it was pretty dry to start April that year, the topsoil was pretty dry, but below 4 or 5 inches deep, it was actually pretty wet still. Mm-hmm. The biggest issue with that dust storm is really the land management aspect of it. And if you go to that part of the state, what we have is a large tracts of land that is actively managed, actively farmed without wind breaks. And so that time of the year, even in no-till systems, no-till kind of conservation agriculture systems where people aren't tearing or ripping the soil, we can still get wind-blown erosion because of planting or other types of equipment that's running through the field. Mm-hmm. And so it is a situation where when we understand the weather conditions, it's very likely we'll see weather conditions like that again, maybe not next year, maybe not the year after, but certainly those windy conditions again weren't unprecedented. And so it's really, I think what that hazard or what that tragedy really kind of put in perspective is how are we managing the land in kind of concert, or maybe not in concert, with the weather hazards that we experience, and what can we do as far as a land management aspect to make sure that if we do get those winds again, we do have some slightly drier soils, that we can reduce the risk of having that wind-blown soil, you know, blowing across a major interstate.
Right. Matt, as we're wrapping up here, you know, part of the role that you play at the National Weather Service is making sure people have the information they need to stay safe in extreme weather events. What have been some of the challenges that have existed with warning people about such events this summer?
I think the challenges are different depending on what hazard you're talking about. But it's complex, and I appreciate you bringing it up. So for heat, the biggest complaint we hear is, it's summer. It's supposed to be that hot. But people, I think, are thinking themselves in their air-conditioned homes, not people working on streets or right. people who don't have the ability to cool down, mm-hmm. People that are in our community that they may not be thinking of those folks. That is who we're here to serve. We're serving every single person in the St. Louis region, not just the folks that have the ability to cool down. Mm-hmm. And yes, it is hot. It is supposed to be. It is summer. It is supposed to be hot. It is supposed to be humid. But we don't warn people unnecessarily. You know, we have set thresholds for a reason. So I think that for heat, that's probably our biggest concern. That and the longevity of things. Explaining to people that a day of 100 degree heat index is not that bad, but 5 days of it straight is pretty gnarly. And we don't want to, we want people to take those precautions because that's a really slow creep, that hazard. Mm-hmm. And then for rain in this season in summer, the biggest problem we have is we sometimes have pretty good skill about when we expect heavy rain, excessive rain, flooding to occur. It's the where and exactly when, right? So explaining to people in this area, you know, maybe in this 60-mile stretch, we have the high potential of, you know, heavy rain and flash flooding. People want exact numbers, exact locations, and truthfully, we can't give it to them. Right. We just ask people to be prepared and take appropriate action when flooding strikes. But that's the biggest challenge there. And I think one other challenge that that kind of threads through all of that is not everybody gets that information the same way.
Right. Matt Beicher is lead meteorologist with the National Weather Service St. Louis, and Trent Ford is Illinois State climatologist. Trent and Matt, thank you so much for talking with us today.
Thank you, Elaine.
Thanks, Elaine.
Today's segment was produced by Aula Kuzitz.
Audio engineering and podcast design by Aaron Dorr.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thank you.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri St. Louis.
The Gateway brings you the day's news each weekday from around the St. Louis region and the state capitals in Jefferson City.
Our schools are accredited. We don't need this bill.
And Springfield.
How many more years must pass before lawmakers see time is of the essence?
I'm Abby Larico. Join me each weekday for The Gateway on the STLPR app or wherever you get podcasts.